You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's oh! Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at LockedOnBulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, on Instagram at LockedOnBulls, and subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us, including Spotify. Make sure to text in voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Hit us up there. We're going to be playing some voicemails at the back end of the show. A lot to get to, mostly centered around Jabari Parker, but yes, again, get all of your voicemails in the NBA and the Bulls, more specifically, tip off tomorrow night. So hit us up, 331-979-1369. Welcome back, Matt. It is one day closer to the tip-off of this Bulls season. I'm getting excited. I'm a little bit nervous to see where this goes in the first 20-25 games without Markkanen, but it should be a roller coaster ride, and I think it's going to be a more entertaining season to watch than maybe so last year for a lot of fans.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the overarching belief from most people here in Chicago, and Bulls fans everywhere who have been paying attention this offseason, is might not be pretty, but either way, win or loss is probably going to be some pretty entertaining stuff for us this season. And yeah, man, tomorrow night, we're like coming up on 24-hour countdown to real Bulls basketball. Can't believe we finally made it. I'm stoked. I'm jazzed. And we did learn earlier today that the starting lineup for the final two preseason games is the lineup that Fred will roll out there tomorrow night against Philly, which means Wendell Carter Jr., the 19-year-old rookie, getting his first start going up against and trying to slow down none other than Joel the Process Embiid and Bobby Portis over Jabari Parker in that starting lineup. I can't wait to watch, man.
Good on Fred Hoiberg, man. I love it.
Absolutely. Good for Fred.
Thank God. We talked about it all summer long. It's like, you know, just because of the optics of all the things that maybe Robin Lopez is probably going to start, but good for him. Like, he saw weakness, saw how bad that front court was with Jabari Parker and Robin Lopez for the first three games. Good for him to see the change and actually implement that change. And I think that's a little peek inside of what some of the decisions that Fred Hoiberg may make this season that are different from the three previous ones, and more so to save his job than anything else.
He said, hey guys, I don't care that you paid this guy $20 million to come here and play. He's not trying on defense. He's not in great shape, and he doesn't run well with the first unit offensively. So guess what? I'm going to bring him off the bench, because Bobby Portis earned that spot through those preseason games.
Looking forward to it, but let's get to a conversation that we didn't get to yesterday, and I think it's important. That's why we saved it for today. Michael Reinsdorf, Casey Johnson had sat down for an interview one-on-one with him, just talking about the Bulls, and I think this is kind of unique because Michael Reinsdorf doesn't normally speak, doesn't normally talk about the team, and you don't get these kind of interviews from him. A lot of GMs around the league, I think, are a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more out there than others. And I think Michael Reinsdorf and the Reinsdorf family kind of sits in where they'll do like one or two interviews per year based on the White Sox or the Bulls. But that being said, I thought he had a lot of interesting things to say sitting down with Casey Johnson. So let's dive into this a little bit. Let's start off right off the top. Talking about expectations for this season, didn't really name any win total, didn't really name a specific goal other than just talking about the storylines that are going to play out throughout the season. Did you grab anything from his expectations from the season?
No, it was the most blah cookie cutter answer to a question about expectations. So I wasn't surprised, but I was not enlightened in any way. He, of course, mentions all the name you expect him to mention. He goes down the list talking about LaVine and Dunn and Markkanen and Bobby and Jabari Parker and, oh, a great Chicago story, Jabari Parker won championships at Simeon. Now he's coming back home. Wendell Carter Jr. And then says it's not about wins and losses. It's about how we develop as a team. What's the chemistry like? How do players play from an individual standpoint and collectively as a group? A lot of great storylines to follow. So that was his response to what are your expectations? I mean, the most bland response to that. But you know, what's he going to say? We're gonna make the playoffs this year. Like, why would he put himself in that position?
It's true. So following that up, a lot of this conversation centered around the front office more specifically, but they touched on the Jimmy Butler trade a couple different times here and there. In as we go through each question, just credit to Casey Johnson for not like letting up as far as the questions he asked about the front office, the kind of the elephant in the room over the last few years with Bulls fans looking at the front office and some of the decisions that they have made. But looking at the Jimmy Butler decision, it's pretty unanimous at this point. Like, he may even feel a little bit more vindicated the fact that they did decide to deal Butler than maybe more so the front office in general. But he feels like they got a jump start on a rebuild. That's great. So then it goes into a question about how does ownership have such a long-term faith in the management's ability to rebuild this roster to open up another championship window? Matt, I'm going to let you take it from here because there's a lot of things to go through. And I think the first thing I have to point to is the fact that he phrased it this way. We took the 30th pick in Jimmy Butler and turned it into Zach LaVine, Chris, and Lowry. Okay. Like, man, you can't do that.
Really? Really? That's how you're going to phrase that? Because he was just finishing up answering the previous question about any organizational regrets about trading Jimmy, and his answer was clearly no regrets. We're comfortable where we are. So he goes back to Jimmy as an example of faith in management and saying, we took the 30th pick and turn it into Zach, Chris, and Lowry. Okay, that is insulting to Jimmy Butler. That is selling Jimmy Butler so short and discrediting. I know you and I, Jordan, have talked about the fact that we are relieved Jimmy is no longer our problem and that as he got better, he turned into more and more of a locker room cancer and a diva. That is true. What is also true is that Jimmy Butler was responsible for turning himself into a perennial all-star, borderline top 15 player in the league from the 30th pick that the Bulls made. It's not like the Bulls organizationally or the front office of Gar and Paxson deserve any credit for the fact that Jimmy Butler 30th pick turned into Jimmy Butler perennial all-star. So don't sit here and say, well, we had the last round of the last pick of the first round a few years back, and we turned around and used that to get these three exciting young pieces that we're really glad. Come on, Michael, really? That's how you're going to phrase that? It's so disrespectful.
He sideswiped Jimmy Butler after giving him a compliment. Like, literally, the question before, he said, so we took a player in Jimmy Butler, arguably a top 15 player in the league. We traded him for what we felt like could jumpstart our rebuild. But then just following that, you follow it with, we took the 30th pick in Jimmy Butler. Like, those two are separate. Those are separate things. Like, yes, Jimmy Butler turned himself into a top 15 player. The only credit that you get for doing anything is drafting him and taking a chance at him at 30th. And like we've talked about many, many times here, after probably the lottery and even maybe after the top 10, it's a crapshoot as far as the NBA draft goes. So you took a chance on Jimmy Butler, sure, but I think taking the idea that he's just a 30th pick at the time of the trade, it's complete nonsense. You traded a superstar in the league.
Yeah, you didn't trade the 30th pick for Zach Lowry and Dunn. You traded a all-star, borderline superstar for Zach Lowry and Chris Dunn. Like, don't conflate those things, Michael, because you're just making yourself sound stupid.
Well, then he goes beyond that, saying you have to be foolish if you didn't look at some of the really good picks that we've had and have hit on. Jimmy Butler was a really good pick. We drafted Taj Gibson at number 26. We drafted Bobby Portis as the 22nd overall pick. And look at who was drafted after him. You're going to make some mistakes, but you also have to recognize the successes. And I agree with him. That's fine. I've said it before. We went back and forth this summer when I was telling you that, you know, stacking up the draft picks that the Bulls have collectively over 10 years, maybe in the short term haven't been good enough. But if you look as far as longevity, if you look 15, 20 years, the Bulls have hit on more picks than they have not. So yes, credit to them for that. The other thing that kind of bothered me is he brought up Jerry West.
Jerry West.
Dude.
Jerry
West.
Oh
my God. Can we talk about the Jerry West references for a second?
Jerry West.
Jerry West.
Did we just forget the fact that Jerry West put together the Golden State Warriors?
I mean, I'm sorry. Also, like,
at all?
Like, what is Michael trying to accomplish by referencing Jerry West here?
Jerry West.
Is he trying to compare his confidence in his front office and what they have been able to do to Jerry West? Because I don't think he's doing himself any favors. What he said is, here's the direct quote, at the same time, clearly you're going to have failures when you're picking players in the draft. Not everyone works out. Jerry West was one of the greatest general managers of all time. If you look at his draft record, you'll see some players he probably regrets having drafted. Who's talking about Jerry West right now, Michael? We're talking about why you have faith in your front office. Who the hell cares about Jerry West?
Well, first of all, when I talked to Jerry West, it was...
somebody who, like you said, one of the best general managers of all time. And to compare him and contrast him, and like, yes, Jerry West has given him credit and said, oh, I like where the Bulls are at. Sure, that's great. But to put his comments in there, like... you can't really compare what the Bulls have done right now to what Jerry West's success has been as a general manager. Those two, once again, don't really coincide together. Like, you could compare yourself to any other general manager in the NBA, and sure, maybe you stack up better against some of the others, but still, trying to compare yourself to, like, the moves Jerry West made, comparing those to what John Paxson and Gar Foreman have done here, probably not the same things.
No, and... okay, could we talk about the fact that he doubled down on that and brought up West again later in the interview when KC had a follow-up question about the perception from the fan base that Gar and Paxson are untouchable? Because in his response to that, Michael Reinsdorf said, well, you know, Paxson says every year the only person who's untouchable is Michael Jordan. Ha ha, you're hilarious. We've heard that a million times. When Jerry West says to me, I like where you guys are as an organization and what John and Gar are doing, that sends a message to me, end quote. Again, who cares about Jerry West? Is Jerry West running your team for you? Or is just Jerry West just a nice guy who, when you happen to have a conversation with him, instead of saying to your face, hey, I think your front office is doing a terrible job and you should fire them and you're stupid if you don't fire them. No, Jerry West is going to politely say, hey, I think I believe what you guys are doing. I like where your organization's headed. And what does that lip service have to do with Michael Reinsdorf as the president and CEO, COO, making his own decision about whether or not this front office should still be employed? I'm sorry, what does Jerry West have to do with any of that? Why is he so obsessed with Jerry West? This really bothers me.
All right, we'll get into more of the comments, because I don't even think we've gotten to the best of it. But I wanted to have a little conversation with you, Matt, first for a second. So let's talk about sex, good sex, and how you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence you may need in bed. Whether it's the listeners out there that are struggling a little bit, so whatever age you may be, BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. BlueChew.com brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even a full stomach. Since they are chewable, they will work up to twice as fast as the pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Blue Chew is prescribed online, shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visits, no waiting at the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the U.S., and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they are cheaper than the pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 for shipping. That's all you have to do. BlueChew.com. First shipment is free using LOCKEDON promo code. Pay only $5 for shipping. Again, that's Blue, B-L-U-E, Chew.com, promo code Locked On. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring us here at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds. Stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. Back here on Locked On Bulls, you can follow us on Instagram. We're really trying to ramp up our content on Instagram, so go follow us over at Locked On Bulls. If you're not on Twitter, but you're on Instagram, we'd love to have you over there. If you're on both, go follow us on Instagram at Locked On Bulls. All right, before the break, we were kind of talking about this weirdness with bringing up Jerry West in multiple parts of this conversation about John Paxson and Gar Foreman. So to follow up, Casey Johnson, I thought, asked a really awesome follow-up question among all the other questions that he asked. He goes on to say, like, clearly you're aware that there's a vocal segment of this fan base that has strong enmity towards your towards management. The Fire Gar Pax billboard, which credit to Casey Johnson for bringing that up to Michael Reinsdorf, would be one of the examples. Does that concern you at all? Matt, what was Michael Reinsdorf kind of his response to all of this, this question?
I love that his immediate response, the first sentence of his response with regard to the billboard was, you have to tune it out. What have I told you, Jordan? Man. What have I been trying to tell to you and all of those billboard contributors all summer long?
He clearly didn't tune it out, though. He was clearly aware.
They don't care. He said, you have to tune it out. And that's exactly what they've done. They don't care about that billboard. They don't pay it any mind. If you think that for 2 seconds, Michael or Jerry said, well, the fan base seems to really not like our front office. Maybe we should fire them. You're out of your mind. No way did that ever happen. Because of a stupid billboard. Now,
the billboard was never about the Jimmy Butler trade. I just want to put that on record for Bulls fans out there who think that.
No.
Or for
I think that there may have been some people contributing to that billboard who were, in addition to previous grievances, also upset about the Jimmy trade. I think there are certainly some people that fall under both of those fields, but it wasn't specifically about the Jimmy trade. And that's kind of like what Reinsdorf backed that up with after saying, tune it out. He said, I know our fans are passionate. They want what we want, which is to win, but they don't always have all the information we have. You have to have a long-term perspective. So, and then he said, so, like the Jimmy Butler trade, a lot of people didn't like it. A lot of people panned it. Commentators, fans, it wasn't well received. Now you go back and look on that trade today, most people would say it was a great trade for the Bulls. Depending on how Zach and Chris and Lowry develop, it could go from being a good trade to an incredible trade. So basically, he went back to the Jimmy thing again, saying, hey, did I mention that we won the Jimmy Butler trade? We won the Jimmy Butler trade because of our front office, and that's why I have faith in our front office, and that's why I don't care about a stupid billboard.
Not about the Jimmy Butler trade, and of course he covered it up with that. It's like, that's not what that was about. But anyway, I think the thing that irritates me as a Bulls fan, whether you are somebody who continues to be on the Fire Gar Pax side, or if you're a super Bulls optimist, or if you fall somewhere in between where I think you and I sit at for the majority of the time, you can recognize the fact that they didn't make great decisions pre-Jimmy Butler. Post-Jimmy Butler trade, they've made some really good decisions, and I think we've followed up with a lot of praise, some criticism here and there when it was needed, but mostly it's been praise. But to say that you have to tune out the fans, I hate hearing that from somebody that runs a Bulls organization that, frankly, wouldn't be this popular without your fan base. So to say that you're just going to turn a blind eye to the fan base, that you're just going to tune them out. I got negative vibes from that. I did not like that. And as a Bulls fan, that would piss me off, even if you are on board with this rebuild. Like, still considering the fact that you didn't recognize that there was clear disdain for what moves that they had made over the last few years. To spin it that all of a sudden this is about them rebuilding, that was never the case for fans that were saying fire Gar Pax. And I think that spin on it kind of pisses me off.
He's just, I can understand why it pisses you off, Jordan, but he's just being honest.
It's true.
Would
it's
you
fair.
Prefer that he lie and no. coddle the fan base? Say, well, you know,
they already do
we
of
really,
that.
You know, we're hurt by that, and we took it under advisement. And for a while there, we had some internal discussions about whether or not our fan base is happy enough and happy enough with the people running our team.
We already get enough of that runaround, so I don't need any more
at
of that.
At no point did that conversation happen between the Reinsdorfs and Paxton and Form. No. I mean, what do you expect him to say? Of course he's going to tune that out. Because unless he wants to run an experiment where, hey, come run the Bulls for the day, be a general manager, execute our next trade, win this fan lottery, and execute our next trade because you're not happy with the performance of the guys holding the jobs right now. Come on, don't be ridiculous. Of course they tune it out. If you start to let the fan base dictate the decisions you make within that building, you may as well tear that building down. Because, I'm sorry, fans are fans. No one out there listening to this podcast, not you, not me, not anybody else who's writing about these Bulls or covering them or blogging about them, is making the decisions inside the building. And if Reinsdorf has to start listening to the opinions of the masses with their torches and pitchforks, then he has lost all confidence in himself as a guy running a basketball organization, and that is not a good sign.
The Bulls are in a unique situation, because if you say these types of things, most places, most teams will see a drop-off as far as their fans, as far as the attendance, the overall popularity of their franchise, right? Things go sour, people start to tune things out in other cities. The Bulls are unique because they have 6 championships in the 90s, because they had Michael Jordan, because they had Scottie Pippen. There's that. The fact that internationally they're known and they're huge because of Michael Jordan. So they're in a unique perspective where they can do that and still draw sellout attendances for almost every home game over the last 10 years, 20 years, whatever have you. They're in a unique situation where they can do that. But they should at least have it on their mind that taking what the fans say and actually, you know, giving it some thought once in a while is actually probably not a bad thing, because at the end of the day, the fans are the reason why this team has been successful as far as the sellouts and the money that you're making is success coming from the fans. The product on the floor is from the players, of course. But you're right, though. You're right in the fact that they should make decisions based on what's going on in their room and what they think, not necessarily what the masses are saying, but they should some ways take a little bit into account what fans are feeling, what they are saying. I think that is important.
Well, and I'll say this too. You are right in saying that Michael Reinsdorf is in the very fortunate position to have the luxury of saying, I believe in our guys. I'm sticking with them. I like what they've done. I know we're not back in championship contention, but I have faith in them to get this done long term. And in the meantime, hey, we're still selling out the United Center for all 41 home games. He doesn't say that part. Well, actually, he did bring up the home attendance in this interview with Casey Johnson, but he has the luxury to be patient with this regime, because despite the product that this regime puts on the floor, the United Center is packed every night. And they are, you know, it started to dip down a little bit, but as far as Bulls TV ratings, as far as merchandise sales, they are still near the tops of the league, still top 10. So, hey, what, you know, why blow this up when clearly it's working? And I, you know, that's probably the slimy part that some Bulls fans take issue with. Like, well, you know, it's only because this fan base is loyal to a fault and worldwide that he has the luxury to say, well, you know, if the Bulls were bleeding money and the United Center was empty every night, like Bulls fans who hate Gar Pax keep threatening to do, but hey, here we are, it's still packed every night. If that actually happened at some point down the road, then Reinsdorf would have to more seriously consider making a change. But until the Bulls start you know, becoming a team that nobody wants to pay attention to, that nobody wants to do ad business with, that nobody wants to go see at the United Center 41 times a year, he has that luxury. So tune out the fans if you want to. And, you know, I'll finish with this. What I've just, you know, gone through saying does not mean that I think Michael Reinsdorf is right to have said that, nor do I think that he has right to at no point questioned or scrutinized the steadiness and deservedness of those two gentlemen in those two jobs. I think despite how we feel positively about this Jimmy Butler trade so far, there have been enough bad moves in recent years where Michael should have seriously considered replacing either or both of these guys. But I was just talking from the devil's advocate's perspective of if Reinsdorf himself starts to question his own decisions within that building because of what the fan base says and what the fan base puts up on a billboard, then he has a problem. And that's probably what he's telling himself. That's all I was trying to say.
No, that's good points. That's good points to bring up. I think it's just it's a little irritating as a fan to hear the words, no, I tune it out. I tune the fan base out when, in turn, a lot of that money that you're making is coming from the hard-earned dollars that the fans are spending. Nonetheless, a few other topics to go through real quick. The fact that he brought up the willingness to spend money in chasing championships, and, you know, Michael Reinsdorf has talked about him being a fan. He clearly said that. He's like, what's your response to the perception of this franchise valuing money over chasing championship? His first response was, I'd say you've never watched a game with me. Well, of course, the entire fan base isn't going to watch the game with the CEO and the president of the Chicago Bulls. Of course we're not. And, true, to any sports fan at their very core, you're still a fan. Every single one of them. I don't care where you came from or what your position title is right now. From the players to the front office, everybody at their core is still a fan. That's why you're in sports. The thing that bothered me here, again, is he says it's not about the money. I'm proud of the organization that we built from a business perspective. He says it's not about the money, but then also pats himself on the back for the business side of things. I'm glad we're able to be near at the top of the league in attendance every year. I'm proud of what we've done in terms of sponsorship sales and season tickets and group ticket sales and from a community standpoint. But all that money we make, the main purpose is to go back into the basketball side. So beyond that, talking about the Advocate Center too that they rebuilt, that was $30 million. Credit to the Bulls for doing that. Casey followed up with, but you've only been in the luxury tax once. What was your take on that? Is the follow-up bringing up the fact that the Bulls haven't gone to that extreme and paid over the luxury tax in order to win?
Yeah, well, if there's any part of this interview where I at least understood the point Reinsdorf made and give him a little credit, it was a solid comeback and a solid follow-up from Casey to say, well, you see, you know, you say you're willing to spend all this money to get the best talent here and the best, you know, facilities, but you've only paid the luxury tax once. The one thing that Michael Reinsdorf said that I didn't take an issue with is that, well, yeah, so after we went to the conference finals in 11, we extended Derek on a Supermax deal, and they were, you know, projected to be luxury tax for a lot of seasons after that. Derek Rose's injuries start piling up. The championship window becomes way less realistic, and then they start doing things like selling off Deng to save themselves $20 million in luxury tax payments. Because guess what? With or without Deng, that Bulls team wasn't winning a title. Let's be real. So I understand that Reinsdorf is saying, compared to some of these other teams that are paying these huge luxury tax fees to be what? The fourth seed? The fifth seed? Losing the first round, losing the second round, you're doing yourself a disservice to pay those fees to be a middle-of-the-pack team. And the Bulls have not wanted to do that. And that, at least, I can understand and appreciate.
Agreed. If you're not in the position to where you can be competitive in the top three of the Eastern Conference, there's no point in going to the luxury tax. So I can understand it from that standpoint. And look, Casey's last question to him was talking about trading Kirk Heinrich for nothing but salary cap space to chase the big three, Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade, and LeBron James back in 2010. He said, you've also taken big swings, but despite strong contributions from Carlos Boozer and Pau Gasol, haven't landed the big name free agent. He said, how confident are you that this financial flexibility, which was the buzzword of this entire conversation, do you believe that financial flexibility will ultimately become part of building a championship here, or the pieces already here on this roster? And it was the same talking points that I think we saw 10 years ago, that we saw eight years ago. It's the same thing that we continue to tout the Chicago Bulls on. And I think that's kind of lost its luster outside of him saying that we have a young, talented team here. Like, look, people are going to look around the league if Wendell Carter Jr. and Lauri Markkanen and Zach LaVine have really good seasons. People are going to look at Chicago and say, you know what, that actually might not be a bad opportunity. But until you get to that point where we can say definitively that they are good and they are on that path, it's still the same talking points in presentation that you gave to Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, and LeBron James back in 2010.
Yeah, I mean, honestly. And there was a little bit of hypocrisy in this final answer that Reinsdorf gave when talking about how, you know, he's confident that the Bulls organization and the city of Chicago are a great attraction for talented players in this league. He said, we have a young, talented team. I think it's not just about money for big-time players today. It's also about winning and losing. And we offer a great opportunity in Chicago. You just said in your first answer in this interview that, well, we're not really concerned about wins and losses right now. But don't worry, we can totally attract the high-end talent, not only because Chicago is a great sports town, but because we've got this young, talented team and people that want to come here because they want to win. Well, you know, look at this great young core that we're building. So, I mean, I'm sorry, you can't negate or dismiss the wins, losses, expectations question to start the interview and then bookend the interview with saying, well, you know, I think a lot of people would be interested to come to Chicago because it's a great sports town and players don't just want money, they want to win. Okay, well, then what was that answer about the wins and losses expectations? Come on, Michael, you can't have it both ways.
The final thing that I will say is that we finally have something to hold Michael Reinsdorf to, hold him accountable to, as far as this rebuild goes. He said, at the end of the day, our ultimate goal is to win, not to make money. Great. That's great to hear. You said you're not scared of going into the luxury tax. They don't fear the luxury tax. That's great, too. As a fan base, we should hold them to that. I don't care if that's next summer or two summers from now, but this rebuild at a point in the next couple of years is going to hit a this is the time we turn it on, or this isn't going to work. It's going to happen in the next couple of years. If we're at the point where this can happen, if we add piece A, piece B by spending money, the Bulls better do that, because they have just said, the guy that's ultimately going to take over the franchise has said that it's ultimately about winning and it's not about making money. So back up those words by spending some money when we're at that point in the next few years.
I think that's totally valid.
That we can hold them to, right, as a fan base collectively. If they don't go out and spend money when we're at the point of the prime of where one piece away could potentially put us back at the top three in the East, and they don't spend it on the right players, we can say this is a failure and we can go ahead and hold them to that. But until that point,
you know, like, they have to get it done at least one time. And by get it done, I mean landing a stud free agent. It's not easy to do, but come on, you live in the third largest sports market in the country. I know it's not New York, and I know it's not the Hollywood and warm weather of Los Angeles, but Chicago is Chicago. And across the other, you know, leagues, Bears, Cubs, Hawks, professional athletes like playing in this town because they know that the sports fans of this town are insane and support them like crazy while they're here. For some reason, we haven't been able to lure those free agents to the Bulls. So I loved Casey's question to say, well, this is something that Gar keeps talking about. It's something that you just talked about earlier in this interview, cap flexibility. Every time that you've been bragging about that, you haven't followed it up by actually using it on a piece that will make this team better significantly. You used cap space and cap flexibility to overpay Ben Wallace. You used cap flexibility to overpay Carlos Boozer. You used cap flexibility to overpay Pau Gasol. You used cap flexibility to overpay Dwayne Wade. And now you've used cap flexibility to overpay Jabari Parker. And in the previous two examples, you did so bidding against no one but yourselves. So I'm sorry, find a more useful use for that cap flexibility that you keep bragging about, or at some point you can't use it as a thing to brag about anymore.
That's why Bulls fans just roll their eyes when they hear that word, that phrase, cap flexibility. The one thing I will say, it's not about getting better. It's about championship chasing. That's the clear thing that Casey had brought up multiple times. Not talking about getting better. Not talking about making the playoffs as a top four seed. He's talking about chasing championships, and I'm glad that he said that, because that's the point we should be at, and that's what I've been advocating for a long time. Don't want to be back in mediocrity. Don't want to be back in the hall of very good, the, yeah, you're good enough to get to the second round, but you lose in a six-game series. I don't want to be back at that level anymore. It's about chasing championships. So they have done it in the past where they've added guys and they've been productive. Yes, they've overpaid, but Pau Gasol had a pretty decent run here. Carlos Boozer, for whatever you think of that, he had a pretty decent run. Both of those players made the Bulls better. Ben Wallace, Jabari Parker, we'll find out about that. Ben Wallace did not. Okay, but they did make him better, but it's about chasing championships. So can you add the guy that's ultimately going to bring you back to that, not just top four seed, second round exit, year in and year out? That's what it's about,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I'm with you right there, man. It's look, you and I, you said this earlier, when it is required, or not even required, but probably useful to temper the insane fervor of the hashtag FireGarPaxNation, we come on this podcast and tell people the things that the front office has done right. And you know, and look, Reinsdorf is not wrong in saying that this regime, since the beginning, has had more draft hits than misses. That is a true statement. They've also had draft misses, and they've made bad trades, whatever, whatever. But look, I gotta say, it felt a little good to go in on some of the stuff that Reinsdorf said in this interview, because I wasn't surprised by any of his answers, and that is what upset me. Because like I could have written out these Reinsdorf answers for him, knowing how the Reinsdorfs deal with the media. And again, credit to Casey Johnson, who is a friend of the pod and a guy whose work I respect. But if we're being honest, people on the Bulls beat, and Casey's been there for a long time, kind of find roles for themselves. And whereas Cowley of the Sun-Times is the I'll print anything, I'll say anything to stir things up, and I'll be the bad guy, put that label on me kind of guy, to a similar extent but not quite as far, the recently departed Nick Friedell would go on Chicago radio and say, I don't know what the heck this front office is doing. Casey has always been fair, if not overly fair, when analyzing this team and what this team has become based on the moves of the front office. But in this interview, he asked the tough questions, and he didn't make any conclusions for himself. This was just a Q&A transcript, my question, your answer. But I think if you look at the questions that Casey asked and the follow-up questions that Casey asked and the cookie-cutter responses from Michael Reinsdorf, it felt good to be a Bulls fan just so, like, furiously enraged with the predictable answers that we got from Reinsdorf.
From Michael Reinsdorf. And I, you know, even as much as we've kind of tore down the entire interview for the last 30 minutes or so, it's finally nice to hear what he thinks and what he has to say, even if most of the answers are cookie cutter. We got a couple things in there that we can hold true to Michael Reinsdorf as an owner of the Bulls. So to me, a future owner of the Bulls, I should say, his dad owning the Bulls still. To me, it'd be nice to get more out of that. And if there are successes and failures, to hear from them again throughout the season. And the more transparent you are with the fan base, the more the fan base is willing to cut you some slack, right? That's the case with, I think, anything in life. If you're truthful, if you're honest, if you're upfront about things, people are willing to give you the benefit of the doubt. And that's why this whole, the fury and the rage over the Bulls' decisions, you know, between 2013 and 2016, 2017,
yeah,
had people furious.
Yeah.
So,
and you know, I think it's kind of the way I think about it is like Michael from The Office. It's like, do you want your subordinates, your employees, to be your buddies or your subordinates? Like, does Michael Reinsdorf want to be the owner? And, you know, you're not wrong. Yes, technically it's still Jerry, but Jerry is not long for this world. And Michael's going to be the one running things. So does he want to have a buddy-buddy relationship with this fan base? Or does he want to do his job? Because, like, there are different examples of how owners operate. Does he want to be a Mark Cuban kind of owner?
Well, I don't think anybody wants to be a Mark Cuban owner at this point.
Well, at this point, with some of the things that have come out about the way that the Mavericks organization has been run over his tenure, certainly not. But you know what I'm saying.
Correct.
As far as the way he carries himself, the personality, the chummy, buddy-buddy, hey, I'm the owner, but I'm one of you. Like, we all eat in the lunchroom together. Like, I'm a cool guy, you know? Or like Amy Poehler and Mean Girls, like, you know, I'm not like other moms, I'm a cool mom. Like, does Michael Reinsdorf want to be a no-nonsense owner who doesn't care about the opinion of the fan base and won't do anything rash when they cry and whine and put up a billboard? Or, you know, like, the decision's up to him as far as what kind of owner he wants to be. It's, you know, it's annoying that we sit here and break down and dissect every answer in this interview and say, none of this is surprising. Same old Reinsdorf BS. It doesn't matter if it's father or son. But try, if you can, every once in a while, to put yourself on the other side, to put yourself in Reinsdorf's shoes. Would you say anything differently? Would you do anything differently? Would you really care and go out of your way and stick your neck out to make sure that the fan base knows how much you care about their opinion? To me, if I'm Michael Reinsdorf, I'm not paying it any mind. I'm really not.
Not with the money or the success that they have, surely not. I think that's going to about do it here, though, on Locked On Bulls. But before we get out of here, get your responses in. We'd like to hear what the fan base thinks about this. Michael Reinsdorf has made two appearances now, Chicago Tribune, and he also went on the Mullion Haw show on 670 The Score this morning. Kind of reiterated the same things that we talked about here, but go back and listen to...
Mention Jerry West again, for the love of God.
Jerry West.
Well, first of all, I talked to Jerry West.
Jerry. Hey, if the Bulls become like the...
Marcia. Jerry.
We will take back everything that we've said about this if the Bulls turn into what the Warriors turned into. But until then let's...
Yeah, okay. Can't wait for that day.
Well, first of all, I talked to Jerry West.
So yeah, get your responses in either on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, on Instagram at Locked On Bulls, or our text and voicemail line. Use that 331-979-1369. If it's just clearly just to get your opinion out there, we want to hear from you. So text us, drop us a voicemail 331-979-1369. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Thanks to our sponsor in Blue Chew. Go check that out. Promo code Locked On for the show. Be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.